Hello, and welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella, the place where we talk about all things creative therapy, creative arts therapy, expressive therapy, creative approaches to therapy, and many things in between. On today's episode, we dive into personality assessments and their use in clinical work. This is something that is really interesting. I just finished actually a career counseling course, and we did lots of personality assessments throughout this course. And I really love how Megan, who is our guest today, digs into how she uses them for clinical work, supervision, within business. She has all these really cool ideas on how she utilizes them. And I love the applicability of these personality assessments. Now, we know that the personality assessments are not extremely scientifically based, but they do give us really helpful information about values and other things. So it was really cool to dive into this topic with Megan. I think we both have these tests are kind of guilty pleasures, but it's really fun to just nerd out on these tests. So Megan has a lot of really great resources to check out too. So don't forget to look at the show notes for today's episode. Before we dive into the podcast, there is a resource that I wanted to share with you. Jackie Flynn, who is the host of Play Therapy Community, which is another fantastic podcast. The link is in the show notes, so go check it out. She is putting on a free symposium from February 3rd to the 7th. It's called the Innovative Child Therapy Symposium, and it specifically targets working with children and adolescents. So if you're a therapist and you're looking for tools, resources, knowledge, anything about working with children and adolescents, this is such a great resource for you. It's free, it's online, Jackie is awesome. She's put together such an amazing group of people. So I have a link to that in the show notes as well. So go check that out. It's free. You can really kind of, you know, take what you want and go to different kind of webinars, each webinar that you really like. There's also, if for an additional fee, you can get more materials that all of the experts have put together as well. So she's just created this really great resource, and I highly encourage you all to go check it out if you haven't already. All right, well, let's dive in to personality assessments with Megan Resig. Okay, Megan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. We have a really cool topic to talk about today.
Yeah, I'm super excited. This is a nerdy, like, obsession of mine. So I'm glad to have it branch over into my professional life.
I'm really excited that it can branch over because it's one of those things, it's like guilty pleasures. I feel like personality tests and all that stuff, I love digging into it, but then I'm like, how can I apply this to clinical work?
And yes.
I think. So we're going to be talking about Enneagrams today. Well, Megan, can you tell us a little bit about what you currently do?
Yes. So I am the co-founder and director of a community art center called Spectrum Creative Arts. So we started, myself and two of my other partners were all music therapists, and we all had our separate private practices. And when I moved back from Oregon, myself and one of the other partners just kind of started looking at spaces randomly because we wanted to have a spot for our clients to come see us versus doing constant home visits. And then as that process evolved, we had a third partner join us, and then we ended up, you know, in the span of a year with like 15 people working for us. And we expanded outside of just music therapy to offer art therapy and dance and theater. And it's been really, really great. We primarily serve kids and adults with developmental needs, but we really market ourselves as a true community art center. You know, all ages, all abilities, no matter who you are or where you come from or how you learn, you are welcome and an artist, and we are excited to help you explore your journey. So that's what I do there. And then over the last couple of years, I've been working with a small local college called Roberts Wesleyan College to help them develop an undergraduate music therapy program. We just started our first semester this fall
2019.
Yay! Yeah.
Exciting.
So
exciting.
It's very, very exciting. It was my alma mater. So it's like, it was a super personal, like, passion project of mine to help them get this off the ground. And then over the course of that work, they asked me to come on board as associate director, which I've been doing in addition to so it's been busy, but like really, really wonderful.
Yes. Wearing many hats. Definitely.
So many hats.
That is awesome. I feel like something that's really, and spoiler alert to listeners, I worked at Spectrum.
So, yes, you did.
I have it's very near and dear to my heart. And Spectrum, I feel like this now too, especially working, having had experiences in other places. Can you speak on the, I guess, uniqueness or the what it's like to have a bunch of different modalities in one place, a creative arts therapy space rather than just a single modality? What is that like?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I talk to a lot of other music therapists, their chief complaint is like, you know, they're in a workplace where they're the only music therapist and, you know, nobody else around them really gets who they are or what they do. And I think the real like beauty of being in a creative arts center is it's like a team of people who do what you do and are doing what you do every day, all day. So that's really, really exciting. And I feel like there's a lot of collaboration and resource sharing and creativity that comes out of sharing a space with so many other creative professionals who are in your work industry. But then when we started branching into art and dance and theater, all of a sudden we were exposed to other creative disciplines that just, you know, I'm a musician. I don't do art. I don't even think that way. So to have a conversation with an art therapist, and if we're sharing a client and I'm really coming up against a wall and she comes up with this really cool art intervention, it just is activating a whole different set of skills that I didn't even really think about using. So it's really cool to kind of see all of the different perspectives that we come from. A lot of our clients that have come to us, you know, started maybe taking music with us. And then also we're like, you know, I really love art. I want to try art, or I really have always wanted to dance. And now they're, you know, they've got like a little tribe of people at Spectrum. You know, they come in and they've got like five different people who know them really well and who are all working on their artistic journey. So helping our clients, you know, we've got five creative arts professionals that are all helping this one client along their artistic journey. And that's such a cool thing because it's, you know, it's happening in all of these different ways, which I love. Yes. And yeah, on the other hand, it's a team of creative arts professionals. So our administrative assistant likes to call it herding cats.
That's great.
A lot of creativity in one space, but
so much. So yes, many yes. Oranges. I know that Wade would say.
yes, lots of oranges on the team. Actually, a lot of blues, but that's a whole different personality test.
Oh, and okay. So is the orange in that one? I feel like I remember taking that one, and I think I was orange and green, but now I can't remember which one that was.
So this was the True Colors personality test. I honestly have no idea where it came from. It's mm-hmm. used in a lot of like career aptitude. Mm-hmm. It's short. It maybe takes like 10 minutes to complete. We do it as kind of an icebreaker opening exercise with we have it kind of as part of our interview process. We do it with new hires. We do it with our interns. It's just a way to kind of start talking about somebody's personality in like a, you know, kind of open-ended way. But so I've given out a lot of them, and blue is kind of like the helper, really in touch with their emotions, really, really empathetic and caring. Mm-hmm. I would say like 90% of the people that I interview for like a music therapy position with us end up being blue. Greens tend to be really scientific and really analytical, and they're really like systems oriented. Oranges are super like fiery and creative and spontaneous. Mm-hmm. And golds are really, family oriented and values oriented, and they really like a lot of structure. So those were kind of the four big ones.
Okay. Because I'm definitely thinking of one that's blue, red, green, and I think yellow. So I'll put a link to the True Colors one that has, that one has gold in it. Now yes. I can't remember. I'm going to have to redo it. I can't remember which one I am, but I don't think I'm green now that you're saying like systems and.
Yes. That, I mean, I'm a green. And I totally related to a lot of things. I think it's one of those ones that's so general though, that no matter what color you get, you kind of relate to.
It's like a horoscope where you're like, yeah. I can apply this, I guess, in some way.
Yes, yes. And I think that's the important thing to keep in mind about personality tests is, you know, they're not super scientifically valid. Like it's not, this is not the Bible to you. This is just a point of reflection and discussion. And if you get something out of the results, then awesome. And if you don't, then, you know, you doesn't have to say mean anything. So.
Yeah. Yes. We were talking about this off air, but I'm currently in a career counseling class and we've had to do lots of personality assessments and, you know, we even did the Myers-Briggs and everything, but even this, it was the biggest part of it was like, this is the Myers-Briggs is 16 personalities, like for the billions of people that are in the world, you know, it's like, it's only speaking on a small part of you, yes. but it can be helpful.
Yes. Yes. And yeah. you know, I know that there's also a really harmful history to personality tests where, there is a tradition of them being used for like discriminatory purposes,
yeah.
like, employers not wanting to hire introverts, for example, which, mm-hmm. Is really awful. So I know. Although, you know, I had always identified so strongly as an introvert and I read the Myers-Briggs a little bit ago and I'm an extrovert.
No way.
Know,
oh my goodness. Are you like right on the cusp of extrovert? Are you like right in the middle?
I think it like reoriented a lot of things for me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, so I had to retake it also, and I've always tested as an introvert, but whenever I would test, it was like 49%. So I was like an ambivert. And my friend Leah and I, we did a whole presentation about this at conference a couple of years ago about introverts, extroverts, and how you can use personality tests to like help understand your clients and whatnot. But I retook mine for this class and I was always INFJ and I changed to INFP and I was like, what? But my teacher told me, I wrote her and I was, cause I was getting all nerdy and about it. I was like, no, I can't believe that it changed. Like I've been an INFJ for like 10 years. And she said something about, she was like, oh, well sometimes if like if you're married or if you spend a lot of time with somebody who is the other letter, then you start to kind of like move towards that way. And my husband does have, he is not a J, but a P on that part. And I was like, oh, so she said that can happen. Like those things.
So interesting. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yes.
My husband's like a super introvert. So it's definitely not that for me.
But I wonder too, with like kids and like how that plays into it too, of like how those things change over your life, you know, like how they can kind of go into that.
Well, and I think it was like, I always, you know, I think I underestimated the fact that like everybody needs some level of alone time. Like everybody needs like some time to unplug. That's not like just an introvert thing. That's like an everybody thing. We all need to wind down. And so, yeah, I think realizing that, you know, made me kind of think like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm totally an extrovert because I can't stop talking to like every single person anywhere. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I like to be alone and watch TV by myself, like every single other person in the world. So
totally, yes. But like, and I think I heard somebody explain it as like, if you get energy after talking to somebody or people, or like if you get energy from being with people, then you have extrovert tendencies. And I was like, yes. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Because I always thought it was kind of like that. I like to be alone and read books and stuff, but it seems to be more nuanced than that.
Yes. Yes. And it's also implying that like extroverts don't like to be alone and read books, which I think is also doing poor extroverts a disservice. Like they're not all like
right.
party airheads, like, you know.
And not all introverts are like, I need to read books 24/7 in my bathtub with nobody yes. around.
Yes. Yeah. They're like, people can be balanced and not yeah. like caricatures of it.
Yes, exactly. So you're what did you test as for your Myers-Briggs?
So I am an ENTJ. So I was always an INTJ and then retested as an ENTJ. And it's what's funny is because I had gone down this rabbit hole with the Enneagram, which I just got like very, very into it. And there's, you can compare your like Enneagram type with your Myers-Briggs type if you're really wanting to. And
yes, please.
Yes. You can Google it. There's like a million sites that do it. And the one, my Enneagram type that I tested as and also really, really relate to was just not lining up at all with my Myers-Briggs type. So I retook the Myers-Briggs and I was like, oh, that's why.
No way. Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So it kind of like and I've like spent a lot of time talking with Steve about it, honestly. Like too much, because now he's like, I want to hear about this personality test anymore.
Like, okay, let's move on.
It really made a lot of things make sense. So it's been fun.
That's awesome. And I think too, like I love that you guys have that as a part of your process, you know, at Spectrum, or even I remember doing that test. Like we were all like hanging out at the front desk and it was like, oh, let's take the True Colors test. And like, cause I hadn't done it before. And it was like, let's see what it is. And it, beyond it being fun, it does serve, and personality tests in general can serve such a purpose for so many different roles, I feel like clinical work, you know, career counseling, it's a big piece to help kind of narrow down what people might look for in a career and what would suit them. But I would love to dig into too with you of like how it can be used in clinical settings, supervision, teaching, any of that stuff, I think would be so cool. It's just great. Yeah. It's super useful information.
You know, and since you were there, we actually started building that into our interview process. And now one of the, you know, I'll have applicants fill out that little personality test, and then we'll use it as a point of discussion. And I'll ask them questions like, okay, what about this personality type would be kind of challenging, or what clinical scenarios would be challenging for this personality type? And then why is this personality like really great in clinical work? Mm-hmm. And it's a way to get them reflecting and in answering that question. You know, one of the questions you always want to ask as an employer is kind of like, what areas do you need support in? Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to ask that question that's not directed specifically at them, but more generally about that personality type. Because, you know, I really want to get a sense, does this person have a strong level of insight? Are they able to, do they have a good understanding of when to ask for help and what they need help with? Or are they kind of just trying to sell themselves in this setting? So it's really opened up a lot of good conversation in the interview process. And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer to any of it, but I am looking to see, you know, does this person kind of, can they reflect on who they are and what strengths and areas of support they bring to their clinical work? And that's what I really want to hear about.
Yeah. And it's such like, I love how you said it's like one step removed, where it's like this personality type, what do they need? Where are their strengths? Not so much like directly at the person, which can be really intense in an interview, because you're like, I want this job, you know, but like that can be a really great way to circumvent that, but still get, you know, understand where that person is.
Yeah. I think that's what also makes it kind of great for therapy too, is you're able to talk about maybe some really vulnerable things in somebody's personality, but not as in like, oh, you always tend to avoid conflict, or you always tend to like give too much and not set good boundaries. But like these personalities tend to do this, and this is what I've seen. Like, you know, it's just, I think it's less targeted, which is nice.
Yeah. It's much less intensive in that way, I think. And even like about the introvert extrovert piece is like, it's, you can get some information, but it's such like a great prompt to get somebody else engaged, to gather more of like, what are their thoughts on that? What is an introvert like for you, you know, versus somebody else? And what is a green like for you versus somebody else?
Yeah. It's been a really useful tool. And, you know, I'm really selective about the clients that I do use it with. You know, they have to have a level of insight where they could answer the questions appropriately and with like a level of self-reflection. It would have to be a useful tool for them, but I've definitely used it with a couple of my clients and it's been very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I'm also interested too with people that have, and maybe this would relate more to the interview process, but since you have so many blues, you know, which I would think would be really common for the True Colors test for therapy roles, do you see the same answers, like strengths and weaknesses, or do you think they vary?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's really interesting. So, the blue personality in this particular test, which again, I'm not sure where it came from, but, you know, they're kind of described as really caring and really empathetic, relationship first, you know, kind of led by the heart kind of people. And so typically when I'll ask somebody who has tested with blue, you know, what areas are really challenging in clinical work? Often the answer will be making those objective decisions, like, you know, if you do a music therapy assessment in a school setting and the person does not qualify statistically for to receive services, you know, denying services based on those objective criteria points, even though you formed this, you know, emotional connection with your client. So it's like situations like that that they'll describe as being really, really challenging, where, you know, somebody who maybe is more on the green side of things and more analytical would feel very, very confident making that decision and trusting that the data was correct and that this was the right decision. So their internal struggles might be different.
Totally. That is so, it's so interesting to think about it like that across, people, you know, if it's, whether it's clinicians, clients, supervisees, of how, if their answers kind of are in the same pool like that, depending on their personality.
Yeah, it has been. There's definitely been like themes that have emerged, at least in the book, because that's, you know, again, what we so get common. A lot of in a helping profession, which I think is kind of logical.
Yes, totally. Yes. Awesome. So then from that, what got you into the Enneagram? Where did that interest kind of come out, or the passion for it come from?
Well, I don't know. I feel like I just really love personality tests, and I kind of am like a little bit of a junkie where like if a new one comes out, I'm like, oh, I've got to take it and like see what it's all about. And up until really the last couple years, outside of just using like the True Colors assessment as a helpful tool, I didn't, you know, I really just kind of did them personally as like almost nothing more than like, you know, the reason you take some of those like weird fun quizzes online. They don't really do anything. But so I, you know, I took the Enneagram and I started reading a little bit about it. And so the Enneagram is set up a lot like the Myers-Briggs, where it asks you quite a lot of multiple choice questions that you answer. And then you are assigned a specific number, a specific type. And it can be a 1 through a 9. Mm-hmm. And each type has a very specific and unique set of characteristics. And then those numbers can also have wings. So they're like little subtypes where your personality can have kind of different shades or like color palettes. Ooh. So it's a little bit more nuanced, which I really liked. It can be kind of confusing when you start to read about like the wings and all of that.
Totally. That's kind of what
it is. It's like a flavor of your type. So I tested as an Enneagram 3, which
which is so see that.
yeah yes. It is. So that's the achiever. They're people that are really, really motivated by like accomplishment. They tend to be like really kind of performative, and I busy. You know, I read it, yes, very, very busy. Mm-hmm. Very like time on task oriented. So when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, oh, I relate to all of this so, so much. And then I started having just like people I knew personally take it. So I had like my husband take it. I had like my family members take it. And I didn't really like shut up about it for a long time. But I got the idea to use it at work after, Noah and Wade, my two partners, and I, a couple years ago, worked with an executive coach to kind of help us define who Spectrum was and where we were going a little clearer. You know, originally we had just kind of set up as a location, and we grew so quickly that we really didn't have time to do like a big vision for the company. And, you know, we were just kind of trying to figure out what to do with all of this growth we were seeing. So we kind of did things backwards. So we had an executive coach come in, and she worked with us to develop a mission and a vision and a set of values. And these five core values were things that like we considered to be totally indispensable to all of our decision-making for the company and our personal work. And they were very much influenced by what we valued personally and the reason why we wanted to start this business in the first place. And that exercise was really intensive, but it was really, really pivotal for us, because every time we were faced with a really difficult decision where we couldn't really parse out a clear answer, we would go back to those five values and say like, okay, well, how do they play into this? And mm-hmm. then it gave us a lot of clarity. So we get quite a lot of newer therapists because we work in a city that has a training program. And one of the struggles that I think most new music therapists go through is starting to figure out their own identity as a music therapist. You know, you've had all these practicum supervisors and then your internship supervisor, and you've done a great job maybe emulating what they do, but you really haven't set your own kind of personal philosophy. So we were getting a lot of therapists who were, you know, kind of struggling with figuring out who they were and how they liked to practice. So I did this little experiment with two of my supervisees where we did that values exercise on a personal level. So we started off by having them take multiple personality tests. So I had them take the True Colors, the Myers-Briggs, and the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. And we compared all of their results and extrapolated maybe some really significant values that came out of those personality types. For example, I had one of them was a type 6, and she is somebody that really, really wants things to be done the right way and wants to make sure that everything is really, really safe and secure. She's the person that's always, you know, making sure that the client has the media release form checked and that, you know, things are HIPAA compliant. And one of her core values that came out of that personal assessment was safety. And that explained so many things about her and her priorities and her boundaries and, you know, how she operated as a clinician. I think that was really, really important. So we did the personality tests, we pulled out some core values, and then we went to, I believe it's Ken Brusch's book, Defining Music Therapy. Mm-hmm. And we started comparing some of the different definitions and philosophies of music therapy practice with those core values and started to kind of pull out like, which one do you really resonate with personally? And then we started trying to dive into that a little bit more. So it was a work in progress, but it was a really cool, supervision exercise. Yeah. And I think we all ended up learning quite a lot along the way. So it's one that I'm hoping to replicate a couple more times with a couple other supervisees. Yeah. And kind of like formalize a little bit more, but it was really, really interesting.
I love how I feel like even just doing the personality test, it is in itself so helpful of what you can gather about someone, what they can learn about themselves. But then I love how you took it like a step further and brought in the values of music therapy, you know, and then, or like kind of bridged those two pieces of personality and then your career and like,
yeah,
you know, finding those pieces together. That's so cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes when we just reflect personally, the things that we think are important are not actually the things that like guide our personal decision-making. Like I would love to think that I was a safety conscious person. Like that's a good thing to be. Yes. But when I think about the decisions that I make, that doesn't factor super highly in the way that I conduct my life. So there can be really great, you know, when you look at, if you go online and you ever look at like a core values list, it's like 400 really, really powerful, great adjectives. And people usually only have about 3 to 5 that really kind of guide their actions. So a lot of times what we think is really important for us is not actually the thing that like makes us do what we do.
Yeah. And I think what I really liked, now I took the Enneagram a while ago, but I had one of the wing things and I was like, I'm not sure what this means, but I was like, okay, yes. Yep. Yesterday I was like, I'm going to take it again because I want to understand it. And I felt like when I started reading some of the descriptions, it was so easy to see like, oh, that like, and I think I know this because I just had to do all these tests also about values in this career counseling class. I was like, oh, that's a value. And that's a value. Like I'm seeing where the values are coming out of that. And like that, those are the things that drive me, like that keep me going or that motivate me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So yes. What was your Enneagram type?
So now this was weird and maybe you can help me with this. So I took it 3 times on 3 different sites and I'll list all those sites in the show notes. But the first one, I was a 4 wing 3.
Okay.
The second one, I was exactly the same 4 and 3, like exact same percentage numbers.
Okay.
And then the third one, I think I was a 3 wing 4. So it was like 4 and 3, very close to
each other. Oh, weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Now, do you, when you read through, so I read a book recently, it was called The Road Back to You, and it's just about the Enneagram and like kind of dives into the different types. And it's a really like accessible read. But one of their recommendations was, you know, if you take the test a couple times, and if you're not like really zoning in on a particular type, to really read through the descriptions and like pay attention to what really resonates with you. Mm-hmm. Was there one when you read the 4 versus 3 description, or were you like, oh, I'm on the fence about both?
It was hard because I think when I first read, it must have been the site too. Also, I think the way it described a 3, I was like, I don't want to be a 3.
Oh, really?
It was like all like, yeah, it was very, it wasn't like in the best light. I think the way that they described it was like very, you know, very concerned with their, how they're presented to the world, but yeah. It kind of like very, it said that over and over again. And I was like, oh gosh,
all of them, it does skew really negative for all of them.
Okay. Well, that's helpful to know. Cause then I didn't feel much better when I looked at 4 either. When I was like, oh, I guess that's kind of, you know, not so much. But I do think, especially now that I've done these other tests for my career counseling class, I do think I resonate more with a 3 than I do a 4. Like, I do think the 4 is a really important part of that. But yeah. I think I would probably be the 3. Yeah.
So did you, so one of the helpful sites that I went to is the Enneagram Institute, which I think that's like one of the first ones that pops up when you Google Enneagram. Uh-huh. But one of the things is it breaks down each type for like when they're really, really healthy, like the epitome of a super healthy 3 is this. And then also like really, really like different stages of like decompensating. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of read like, oh, you know, if a 3 is like super, I think one of the description is like really vain and really concerned with like outward appearances, that comes into play like when they're really, really unhealthy, like kind of the more unhealthy, the more those like negative, like needy attributes come out, and then the healthier they get, the kind of the more stable. And so anyways, that's kind of true for every personality type. Those like negative attributions tend to like come out as they move towards different levels of well-being, which I don't quite understand like that, but
I think, okay. So that makes me think about it more too, of like that. And I feel like the site I probably read the first one was just kind of like a very overarching theme of a three,
yeah,
and probably just shoved all of the healthy and unhealthy in like one paragraph. And I was like, whoa, but that makes more sense too, in thinking of like, this is what, you know, I don't want to say successful, but I think like healthy, you know, and then if you're not taking care of yourself or have, you know, dropped out on self-care, what that can look like if you're,
yes,
you know, I think that's cool. I really want to check that out.
Yes. Yeah. It's, that was really helpful, because I feel like most of the descriptions are like pretty negative, except for twos. I feel like twos, they're like, oh, they're like angel helpers and like so compassionate. And I just, okay, well,
fine, a two.
It's like they love too much, you know.
their biggest weakness is they're, yes, just too perfect.
They just love everybody too much.
Oh, great. No offense to any twos out there.
No, twos, you're wonderful. The world needs you. Yes.
So apparently. I'm curious, did you also have a wing?
I think I was wing four. It was like whatever the hostess was.
Okay. I don't remember. I know, yeah, wing four is the individualist.
Yeah.
Or the unique something, I also heard it called, but I didn't know if that, yeah, has anything to do with hosting.
That might just be like a quirk of the site that I took it on. Like they, yeah, so maybe sometimes like gave it a different label, but I'm pretty, yeah, sure I was a three wing four.
Cool. That's funny.
Yes.
Very cool. So now Megan or Wade and Noah have also taken this, right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, have you guys since you guys run this company, have you noticed a difference knowing each other's Enneagrams now?
You know, I think so. I have to say that like this like mania for it is not shared by them, I think. So they've taken it reluctantly and they will patiently listen to me go on about it. But I think as far as like all of us being gung-ho and like reflecting on it together, you know, I think that's maybe my own interest. But it has been helpful, because I feel like with everybody, there's this tendency to be like, well, I want things done this way. And I just don't understand why somebody doesn't see it this way, because this is clearly the right way. Mm-hmm. And I think when you understand that there are lots of different personality types and there's lots of different ways that those types interact with the world around them, and they all have different values, you can start like playing to each other's strengths a little bit more and really valuing, you know, the perspective that each other person has. And I think that's been really helpful. So Wade is a type seven, which is, you know, super creative and spontaneous. And sometimes I can get so bogged down in like climbing the hill of accomplishing things that, you know, he's like, oh, I just thought of this like really, really cool song that we could do right now. Like he kind of like keeps me in touch with my artistic side a little bit, which is really important as a creative professional.
Yes, totally. And I think, yeah, too, like as a three, I think that also can be a negative thing, or like maybe one of those unhealthy things of like, especially if you're a creative three, that if you can get so bogged down in like getting to the place where you want to go and, you know, like making those achievements and getting those accomplishments, that then it's like you can forget about being creative or like being, yes, in those moments or taking a step back and just having some fun.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because I was a piano performance major in my undergrad, and like performance was like this huge part of my identity. And I've always been incredibly comfortable on the piano. So as a music therapist, when I had to go to another instrument that I didn't excel at, it was so painful. And even today, you know, I really like kind of loathe the guitar, not because I don't find it useful and I can't play functionally, but because I am so conscious of my like imperfections on the guitar. Mm-hmm. And then I see somebody like Wade or like Noah who can kind of pick up an instrument and not really be concerned about a level of skill and still be super musical on it. And they don't get like caught up in that, like, oh, I'm not very good at it, so I'm just, I hate it, you know? You know, it's, yeah, it's, I think it's been helpful for me to like, you know, really like understand and value the differences that we all bring to the table.
Yeah. And then I think too, helping yourself understand that like, how that is part of your personality, you know, and then like, oh, okay, that's why I'm feeling that way. Or like, maybe yes. That's why I'm, you know, saying this thing kind of in my mind about that, which can be really helpful with that like self-awareness and self-reflection piece too.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So one of my self-care exercises is to make sure that I spend time on a non-goal-directed activity.
I love that. I might have to do that.
So like,
I can't even think of one.
A puzzle.
Oh, okay.
Puzzles are useless. Nobody gets prizes for puzzles.
Nobody gets a gold star for a puzzle. No, nope. That's a great one.
You know, when you get done, you have to rip it up. You don't even frame it and show it off. You just have to rip it up and start another. It's like a process oriented thing.
I always say, I'm like, I'm going to glue it together and frame it. And I never do. Never ever do. No.
Not the point of a puzzle. You got to rip like it up that. And do it again. Yeah. Any non-goal directed activity.
That is awesome.
Now I do put that in my planner with a checkbox next to it. But
it's a three wood.
Baby steps.
Yes. It's really funny because I think that the one part that I read about a three that I was like, oh my gosh, yes. It was like, they're never happy with what they have.
No. Like,
oh, that explains it. Like, and now I get it. Yes, that's me. Oh, yep. Man. Yep. So I was like, oh, I can definitely.
Yep. It's like always like one upping.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know,
I need one more book.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Yeah. My reading goal for every year, it gets like progressively higher and more like unattainable, but I have to still like one up myself from the last year, which I find myself reading ridiculous things just to like meet my goal, which is it.
Just to check it off.
Yes. But,
oh man, I like, after I read that, I was like, I think I need to do more like gratitude. I'm like, just saying I'm grateful for those things, even though I do want more things, at least the other side of it, be like, I'm grateful for this, this, and this. And maybe that will be my self-care part of that.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, it's a lot of fun reading about. I read a couple of the differences. I think I read like about a 3, 4, a 6, and a 7. And I think I read about a 7 because Wade did tell me that he was a 7. Yes. And I was like, as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, of course, it's definitely Wade. But do you feel like too, I don't feel this way about like a Myers-Briggs because it's a lot more intensive, but do you feel like when you like, you know, somebody that you can kind of know which one they are, like now that you're kind of familiar with it?
I do. And it's funny because the book that I read was like, please avoid like pointing out people as types because like, that's obnoxious. But I do feel like I like when I meet somebody, I totally like want to know what their personality type is. Or mm-hmm. if I'm in a situation where I need to work with somebody and collaborate, there's like part of me that does kind of like want to guess and want to know, because then I feel like I can, if I have a box I can put them in, then it's a whole lot easier. Which, you know, again, it goes back to those thing that like people don't belong in boxes, and yes. these personality types are super flawed and really, really fun, but like are not more than like a point of reflection. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally catch myself like, you know, trying to guess like, oh, I think that person's a 2.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like you can think about, you know, like just seeing, like trying, it is really trying to pick apart somebody's values of like, oh, you know, like what really drives them or what really kind of motivates them to do all these different things or what pieces of their personality really shine.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been interesting as an employer because, you know, employers in private practice tend to see a really, really high rate of turnover. The music therapy profession has an incredibly high rate of burnout. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of my reasons for wanting to dive into kind of identity development with my supervisees and really get to understand their own personality values better is so I could learn a little bit more about what made someone really, really successful and thrive in a setting that I provided. And maybe what are the things that like made this person not appropriate for the type of setting I was offering. So it kind of helped me line up the type of career experience I could provide somebody more thoughtfully and intentionally. I think we always just chalk up, like if we have turnover, we always just kind of chalk it up to like, well, not everyone's a good fit for everything. But I think it's really important to identify, you know, as a clinician and as a business owner, if you are one, you know, what are the values of my business and what personality values are really going to thrive in this setting and what values maybe are going to struggle a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, we have, you remember this, really weird schedules. So being a community art center, you might have a school district contract that like starts at 8 o'clock in the morning on some days. And then on other days, you might have some community clients that typically go between like that 4 and 7:30 range. And so, you know, the hours are all over the map. Yeah. So if you're somebody that really thrives with variety and, you know, you're somebody that really likes new experiences, maybe that's great. If you're somebody that really prefers stability, then maybe that's not the best setting. And,
mm-hmm. And I think too, like that, especially at, in a private practice where you serve, you know, clients, you're in school districts, and then you might be at a assisted living facility, and where you can be all over. When you're just figuring out like your identity, and you're figuring out what, you know, sits for you, what is, you know, what do you really like? It's so helpful to have something that's grounding, like at like a personality test where it just gives you an idea of like, oh, these things are my values. I know for me, like I always struggle with the idea that like, I want to help everybody, but that doesn't mean that I can help everybody. Like, yes. And it can be a really hard thing, especially as that's probably like a very blue personality kind of thing of like, you want to help everybody, but that doesn't mean that your personality necessarily fits in all of those different places or schedules or all those different things.
Right, right. There's so much that goes into values, and it might not even, you know, it might drive more than just your population preference. Like maybe you are truly an eclectic therapist, but it is the particular setting or the way a job is structured that is really aligned with your values. Or maybe it's, you know, the people that are in charge of supervising you. You know, maybe, you know, if you're in a setting and you're a really like safety conscious person and you're in a setting that is just incredibly lax with everything, then you might constantly have this internal conflict going on, and that might really increase your level of dissatisfaction and then subsequent burnout with a position. So I think really understanding who you are and what your values and needs are when, you know, when you're job hunting or when you're kind of exploring your clinical identity can help really ensure stable and long-term work, which I know is a big goal for our profession in general. Stability is just really, really threatened by a lot of factors in our profession.
Mm-hmm. Especially with that burnout rate and you know, where I think it's in the first 5 years, like that's where a lot of clients or a lot of therapists leave. But that's such a huge place for that identity development. And, you know, I wonder if this is something like if it happened more in schools, you know, if that would happen less frequently, if, you know, students or interns came into the profession knowing themselves a little bit more, knowing what they valued, if they'd be able to, I don't know some of those self-care things they need to do. Maybe population pieces, maybe they decide to do their internship somewhere else because for XYZ reason. I would wonder if that has an effect on that.
Yeah, I absolutely think it would. You know, I think, you know, we've done a ton of interviews. We've seen a lot of new professionals come through our door. And, you know, it's funny because almost every single one, if they're a professional that's come straight from their internship, you know, they always come and they're like, I love to work with everybody. I'll do absolutely anything. I totally don't mind driving. I totally don't mind like crazy hours.
I want to do it all.
All of it. It's all great. I totally am into it. Yep. And then, you know, 6 months down the road, that might not be the case. And that's totally okay. But that kind of self-understanding can be really helpful for any new professional, no matter really what career you're going into. I think mm-hmm. it'd be so helpful for you know, students to really go through these exercises and kind of engage in more personal self-reflection as they're starting to enter the workforce and understand like what that really means.
Yeah. And I think like you were saying too, to have the confidence in knowing that it's okay to not do all those things, you know, yeah. to not be like, I can do all of it, you know, like to know yourself well enough to be like, you know, I can do all these things, but I might struggle here. Cause that's a great thing. I would imagine as an employer, that's something that you want to hear and want to be prepared for.
Yeah. Oh, I love nothing more than having somebody that comes to me with a really clear understanding of their weaknesses. Cause usually it's me being like, do they know this isn't great? Do they know they're a bad communicator? Do I need to bring this up? But if someone comes into me and says, you know, like, no, I'm not an incredibly detail-oriented person. Here are the steps that I put in place to kind of like help catch mistakes that I make with those kind of little things. I love hearing that. I would rather have that than the person that is, you know, just super, you know, perfect at everything. I would rather have that level of insight.
Yes. Yeah. And then too, like as a supervisor, like what a great opportunity for growth and for implementing those things. Like I would think as a supervisor, if somebody is able to identify, you know, like, oh, well, these are my values and I might really struggle if I was in a place where I didn't have a lot of opportunity to run my own schedule or make a lot of my own decisions, then like that is a great goal area, you know, of like, oh, okay, that's awesome. So if this is something you run into, how can we make this a goal? Or what kind of things can we build to support that? If it's detail oriented, you know, like what kind of things can we look at to support that?
Yes. And then those things are in line with a person's internal motivation and not like a problem to fix. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, we've both identified that you want to improve this area because that's something that like you value and not something wrong with you. Yes. And then there's more internal motivation to address it than, there's Daniel Pink does, I think it's in his book Drive. He talks about internal motivation and how the very best thing that you can do in a relationship with somebody is support those things that drive somebody internally. That, you know, that what you can do with internal motivation, just, you know, external motivation just totally pales in comparison. So the whole book was about motivation. It was really, really excellent, as like all of his books are. But I've got a lot out of that for supervision. And I think a lot of times in supervision, the supervisee is attempting to emulate their supervisor. You know, you learn by like kind of copying their style and mm-hmm. their songs and their mannerisms, but then they get out into the world and that cannot be really an authentic way of practicing. And then there's that awkward moment as they're trying to figure out who they are. So yeah, I think there's a lot of value in understanding yourself. And these are just like great tools to help do that.
Yeah. And especially like that when it comes down to somebody's internal motivation, their setting can change, the population they work with can change, you know, like they could move, they could do all these different things. But if they are aware of that internal motivation, then like that just drives more success. Because exactly. External motivation changes all the time. You know, like I feel like you can never rely on it. It can't always be consistent.
Yes. Yes, totally. Yeah. You know, we are working on this new little side project called Spectrum Press. Right now it's on our website. It just like kind of houses a lot of the resources that we have used and found to be really helpful. And we've just kind of had them, and we're kind of starting to develop a brand new separate site that will be a more like active, you know, house for that, where we're really going to start developing that in 2020. But anyways, one of our big goals was to start getting members of our team involved in contributing to Spectrum Press. And, you know, the whole thought, you know, we were like, you know, we brought it up in some meetings and we're like, we would really like to do this. And we kept, you know, our biggest worry was people are going to feel like this is one more thing added to their already really busy plate. What incentives could we put out there to do this? And then wouldn't you know, one of our team members sends me an email. She's like, I have a proposal for this reoccurring feature that I want to do on Spectrum Press. And here's all of my ideas. And she was just motivated because she loved the idea. And I was like trying to put together all of these like, you know, weird incentives. And it's kind of hard to like do that with this type of project. And here I was totally discounting the fact that like maybe some people just would want to do it because it's fun and it's cool and they just want to.
Yes. Yeah. That's so awesome. That's such a great example of that, of like, well, there might just be some people that are like really motivated, intrinsically motivated by that. Yes. Yeah.
And you know what? Like I'm totally fine with being like, you know what? Those people that are super excited, absolutely get involved. If this is not your bag and you're like, yeah, you want to leave that behind. Okay. Like that's okay too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good reminder for me.
That's hilarious. That's such a great, great visual too, to really see that difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Yes. It's so funny. I feel like the only reason why I have talked so much about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation is because I'm involved in this research study that's been going on forever with the U of R, and it's wrapping up, which is really exciting, but it's based off of self-determination theory, which encompasses a piece of it is intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And I never really thought about those big differences until doing this research study, but it's so applicable with like personality tests, with supervision and self-awareness of knowing those things. And actually, Wade shared this, I think, with me, and I don't know if he showed it to you already. There was an internship who based their whole internship off of self-determination theory. And it's like all about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, and then autonomy and relatedness. So it has like all these different pieces, but those motivation pieces are big parts of the internship, the whole way the internship, like the whole way it's set up.
Yeah. You know, he went to a presentation about that at conference.
Yes.
He really, really loved it. And then, the first thing he said was like, they presented about all these things that we're doing in our internship that I totally didn't label. So, you know, it's funny because I think he's built in a lot of those, you know. I think Wade is somebody that is really, I think he really resonates with self-determination theory, and since he's the internship director, he's totally shaped what the internship looks like. And so many elements of that are kind of already built in. And he was so inspired by that presentation and the way they kind of formalized all of those steps. But yeah, that's definitely something that is starting to play a big factor in how we structure internship and supervision and I think there's a big movement for that, not just like the traditional, like what went well, what didn't go well.
Yes. What really are your strengths? What are your weaknesses?
Yes.
Yeah.
But really understanding like the bigger picture of you know, somebody's work and what they're bringing to the table, and then what our clients are bringing to the table. You know, I think when you talk about motivation, we use that in our clinical work a lot.
So much.
You know, and I think we're kind of moving away as a profession from that more behavioral, like rewards, token system type of work, which is a whole other ballgame if you're a music therapist and you totally value, you know, that self-determination kind of theory, but you're in a setting where you're in a school setting with a client and like that's their behavior plan and you have to totally work outside
totally.
Of that.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Yes.
But I think, you know, that really plays into our work. If we can understand our clients and what is that thing that fuels them and makes them really, really excited to work on a goal area, then that is where magical stuff happens.
Yes. Yes, so much. I think that's such a good way to put it, is like when you can find that intrinsic motivation and pull it out, it makes me think of, I think in Nordoff Robbins, they call it the music child.
Yes.
And there's like a pie chart, it's like a circle diagram and the music child is on the inside. And like, if you can find that way to get in there and like make that pathway out, which is intrinsic motivation, like it's not external, it's finding a pathway to create intrinsic motivation in a setting, a musical setting, then that is where like all of that magical, amazing stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we're just like holding space for that, or like, you know, just kind of providing the musical environment for that to happen. You know, I can't tell you the number of clients where, you know, they would come in and it was just their ability to interact with lots of different instruments and be in a place with a therapist who just kind of would follow their lead or would support them musically. And then all of a sudden they were really doing things that, you know, they were supported in that journey. And I think that's become a big part of my philosophy, is to be less of a leader and more of a just like holder.
Yes.
Yeah. I definitely had a more behavioral initial training, I think. I think that my master's equivalency program had more of a behavioral focus. So that was definitely a big shift for me as a clinician when I started to figure out, like, how do I like working and how do I really not like working? I was totally that music therapist in the school setting that the teacher was like, oh, if, you know, if they're doing an off-task behavior, you take their instrument away. And like, that's on their behavior plan. And I was like, oh, something in me is like, my hurting. I just can't, I don't agree, but I also can't. So yeah.
Totally. And that's something that I think is such a challenge too, of like when you're, especially like when I was working in school districts, like school districts want to see numbers. They want to see data. They want to see like, was this completed 5 out of 10 times or whatever. And it was such a hard, I had such a hard shift with that too, of like, okay, I feel like, you know, I don't want to have this kind of like, I guess authoritarian, this kind of like, you know, you need to come in and do X, Y, Z, and then you can go back to your classroom. But because then that magic wasn't there, the opportunity wasn't always there for that. But then it was so hard to have that space where it was like, okay, more of like a humanistic maybe model, or, but then also still show the progress on progress notes and IEPs, which is, can just be one of those really awkward places where you're really in the middle.
Yes. You know, that has been, one of my favorite supervision questions for, our school-based team. Yeah. That are really identified as humanistic, like how do you hold your humanistic values in an environment that tends to be still very grounded in behavioral work? And what do you do in those situations? And how do you balance both of those? And I, you know, I honestly don't have an answer, but it's led to some really great discussions about relationship building and, you know, the importance of data, but then the importance of the relationship. And, you know, yeah, that's been, it's been one of my favorite kind of debate, like provoking mm-hmm. questions in supervision.
Yeah, I remember that being a huge, like a huge piece of, once that identity started forming more for me of having more of like that humanistic perspective, but then being in that situation, it was like, it was a, it's a hard place to be because you do need to show all of that data and you still, you know, like I still want to take data to show what we're doing, but you know, how do you explain in a 5-sentence progress note when a kid makes eye contact with you for the first time and runs back and forth to the piano. And that's really big. Like that's a big deal, you know, and you know that because you know this child, but like, how do you explain that? And, you know, it can be a really big struggle for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it totally can. Yeah. And I'm absolutely not saying that humanistic therapists don't thrive in school settings, because I know who do and who do a great job. Yeah. But there's got to be that balance, and it could be school setting. It could be any setting that is kind of grounded in that like more behavioral, kind of black and white structured approach. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, and you know, the therapists that I know that really thrive, they've just figured out some great ways to find a happy medium, to satisfy the requirements of their role, but also not compromise their values. And I think if there was one thing that leads to burnout faster than anything else, it's when you have to compromise your core values.
Yes. And
I think if you can find a way to figure out what those are and then like hold them really, really, really tightly and yes. never let them go, then I think you're able to work, you know, kind of anywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are the ones that I feel like have really figured it out.
Yeah. And I think that speaks exactly to that intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Is like, if you can hold on to those values that drive your intrinsic motivation, then you can be in a place that might require you to have more, you know, black and white kind of goals. But if you hold those things tight enough and can find ways to adapt that in your clinical setting, and if you can find ways to adapt that, then you will still thrive. Like you're not going to burn out, you know, as quickly if you're able to hold on to that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, Megan, this has been amazing.
I could go on about
I love it.
Personality assessments and value. You know, this is like just where my head has been at for like the past year. I'm hoping to do something with it. Like I'm trying to think about how, you know, what my next steps are going to be with, you know, maybe formalizing an exercise or a supervision process. I'm still thinking about it. But,
I mean, I think in itself, like how, like connecting with like Ken Brusha's book and, you know, those elements, it sounds so cool and something I feel like so many people would be interested in. Trialing or, you know, seeing that step-by-step process of how to take something like personality assessments and then bring them into supervision and then also then connect them to music therapy values and elements and then how to make that a really broad picture within supervision.
Yeah. It's definitely been a really cool exercise to do, and I'm hoping to like replicate it with a couple more of my supervisees and then maybe put it together in like a presentation or like a little mini book. Cause it's been really fun. There you go. Yes.
That would be perfect. I feel like that's a perfect size for an ebook. Is like,
it totally is
what I need. Yes. Megan's going to have an ebook soon. So
there you go.
Well, we talked about a couple different resources. The Road Back to You, the Enneagram Institute, and then Danielle Pink's Drive. Is there anything else that you would send supervisors, employers, internship directors to if they were interested in looking about of using this more in their work?
The True Colors Personality Assessment we use a lot. Cool. And I think that one is useful because it's so short. So you can do that as an icebreaker exercise. You can fit it into an interview without it having it take like forever. Cool. That one is one that I value like mostly for its brevity. And then it's pretty basic. Yeah, as far as other Enneagram, I mean, you can go, there's a couple Enneagram Instagram accounts I follow that are just, it's mostly like Enneagram memes for specific personality types.
I love it. I love it.
They like bring me a lot of joy.
And also the one thing I almost forgot too, and I only know this because Wade shared this with me. There's an artist or a band that came up with the music, right?
Yes. So Sleeping at Last. Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm so glad you said that. Yes. So Sleeping at Last, amazing band.
So yeah.
Like I love his like voice is so haunting and soulful. And so anyways, they did a whole album where they composed an original song for each Enneagram type. And they're so good. Like I am not particularly emotional, but I listened to the 3-1 and I was like, oh my God,
it's me.
How do they know? I mean, it's just, I mean, but it like gorgeous, gorgeous music.
Awesome.
I haven't tried this yet, but I have one client right now that I do a lot of improvisation with, and he's incredibly reflective. And one of my goals in our work is to eventually create an improv piece around his personality type, mm-hmm. and to have him pull out different musical elements that kind of reflect that. So I'm hoping to do some clinical improv.
That's cool.
Haven't done it yet.
What a cool idea though. Oh my gosh. I love that. Very cool.
Yeah. I've been trying to start to think about like what musical elements might kind of go along with each type, but mm-hmm. I'm gonna need Wade's 7 brain for that.
Bring in Wade. Yes.
Yeah, he's good with like the creative inspiration. Like
yes.
Yeah, I have to like, you know, I'm going about it really methodically, which isn't always helpful in these situations. So yes. I'm rope Wade in.
You're like, I know.
He's gonna find out when he listens.
You're like, I have this goal and I just need you to help me creatively get there.
Yes. That was one of my favorite phrases. I tell it, my husband's a 5 and it said 3s excel at marshaling the skill sets of other types for their own devices.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Just totally. I'm like, yes. A new kitchen would look really, really great. Steve is really good at building things. I'm going to make him build this thing.
Because I know their type. I have this project. Yes. Who do I know that's a 6?
Exactly. We're really good at that.
That's hilarious. I did not realize that. I need to read up on the other types now.
Yes.
I can start doing that.
The road back to you is really good because it also it also puts a more like holistic and positive spin on all of them. Like
cool.
I don't know. Some of the websites you read and it's like, oh, these people are the worst.
But,
like,
yeah. I'm excited. I think I'm gonna go try to get that book ASAP. Yes. And there will be links to all of these things, all of these pieces and resources that we've talked about in the show notes. Cool. But also, can you tell listeners where to find you if they want to reach out and nerd out more with you about the Enneagram? Yes.
So our website is Spectrum Creative Arts, www.spectrumcreativearts.com. org. We also are on Instagram, Spectrum Arts LLC. We're on Facebook. Let's see.
I'll also put a link to Spectrum Press too.
Yes. So if you go to spectrumcreativearts.org right now and click on resources, we have this whole library divided by categories like social skills, academics, children, like all of the categories we could think of. And we've got resources under each one. And we're putting things on there. We usually put on like 1 to 2 per month. And then in 2020, we're kind of really moving forward with kind of a whole new branch of Spectrum Press that will have lots of resources and a shop where we're going to be selling things, a couple CMTE courses, and lots of stuff like that. So that is in the works.
Very cool project. I can't wait to hear about that. I have, so for listeners, if you haven't listened already, I interviewed Wade, I think it's episode 2. That's really great. He talks about his songwriting protocol, but I have yet to interview Noah. So maybe I'll wait until this really awesome thing comes out and interview Noah in a few months in 2020.
Yes.
So yeah.
You'll get the trifecta right there. Oh,
it's necessary for sure. Yes, I love it. Awesome. Well, Megan, thank you so much for being on today. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been
a blast. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I had so much fun, not only because I just love talking with Megan, but this topic was so much fun to dissect and see how personality assessments can be implemented into clinical work, supervision, and business. So one thing I wanted to mention is that I ended up retaking my Enneagram test after this because I still didn't feel like it was quite on. And when I took it, I came from a different perspective, I think, rather than the questions are very much you're answering kind of on a Likert scale of, you know, do you feel that achieving is important to you? You know, not so much or very, very much. And when I took the test this time, I thought bigger picture than I did smaller picture, which was a little bit more helpful, especially when answering several questions. So I would look at several questions and think, okay, achieving is more important to me than being an individual, and I feel like being a helper would be in the middle of those two. So then I would rate those accordingly on that spectrum, and that was really helpful for me to kind of look at that big picture of, you know, this would be most important and this would be least important, and then this would be in the middle. And I ended up testing as a 3-wing 2, and once I read the description of that, I'm literally getting chills as I'm saying this. I was like, oh my God, that is it. And it's so funny because after I went back and listened to this episode, and as Megan was describing it too, and we're laughing about it, I was like, oh yeah, I can totally see that. So I'm a 3-wing 2, and it's been so cool to kind of dive deep into that and understand more. But I hope that this encourages you to go out and have some fun and take some of these tests if you haven't already. There's a ton of links in the show notes, so don't forget to check those out. Thank you guys so much for listening, and be creative.